The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. It's Tuesday, the 7th of April. And up first tonight, George Filer. George, of course, the editor, creator, CEO, COO, and publisher of Filer's Files, the world's foremost premier UFO, ET, paranormal, and other historical facts email newsletter that can come to your email box anytime you'd like. All you have to do is ask. We'll tell you how to do that this hour. No charge at all. Just happy to have you on board and reading the information, which is always fabulous and interesting, and better to have read it than not to have read it at all. Somebody said that once. Hello, George. Welcome back.
Well, glad to be here.
I'm glad to hear your voice as always. You're back home. How's the weather? It's a little bit skitsy in April sometimes.
Right. It's been very nice the last couple of days, 65 degrees or so.
Well, don't hold your breath. Snow could be on the way.
Right. You never know.
No, it's in the Northwest, April, where I am, is always odd. It can vary quite a bit. It's not stable. Maple trees are blooming already. They're interesting to watch bloom. Many of the other trees are blooming. The liquid amber is not quite yet. The willow trees are. I've got some corkscrew willows, and they're already bloomed out. Pretty. The oak trees are about, I'd say a third the way leafed, and they look real pretty. So it looks like it's going to be a nice spring. Thank God this part of the country is above the drought in California. They are really obviously having a very tough time down there. So you won't have it back there, but the breadbasket of America, California, with a gross state aggregate product, which would rank 7th in the world's countries if it were stacked up that way, is obviously having great trouble. What worries me is that Californians are going to begin to leave California in droves and come north and move east to Medford, New Jersey.
Right.
Yeah, I'm serious. I look, they can stay there. The state can turn back into a desert. But if it were up to me, I'd blow the bridges and keep them there. All of them. I don't care what race, color, creed, or nationality. We don't want the people up here. They're down there. They can deal with it. What's interesting is that approximately 10% of the water in California, I think it's 12, is used for people needs, drinking, bathing, cooking, landscaping, almost 90% of it is used for agrarian purposes, agriculture. California, of course, the breadbasket to America in many ways. But it's the farmers who are eating up the water. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that's what it is. If it weren't for the agriculture, California would be fine. It wouldn't be a drought to speak of. So it's a multi-edged sword. A tough situation. If you look at rents.com, center column, our headlines column under the Fukushima stories, you'll find George's most recent filer's files, issues 12, 13, and 14, and always fun to look through, as I said. So what's been going on? Busy? Slow? Sightings?
Well, things are starting to pick up a little bit. You know, that people are getting out a little bit more, so they see more.
Yeah.
That simple. And there's been a few, you know, nice reports. Big triangles and large flying wing that they claim was like five times bigger than our aircraft was flying over Argentina just last week.
Five times bigger than a 767 or something like that?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they're saying from the ground, sometimes it's difficult to tell based on altitude and all that, but in any case, they felt it was much larger than any
now,
aircraft that they see fly over.
If these were logic, if these were ours, first of all, in my opinion, they wouldn't be flying over urbanized areas, which is very commonly reported. But secondly, why, George, you're an aviation expert, why would we be making something so huge? The scale is not necessary. We could make them as large as two 767s in length and width, wingtip to wingtip. But when you start talking about six, seven times a mile across, there's no reason for that I can see.
Well, you carry a lot of passengers or a lot of cargo, possibly oil from one place to another. But generally speaking, it's not.
We don't need to carry oil. There's
for
oil.
Us to build those kind of aircraft.
No, and there's no reason. There's oil everywhere. We've got transit. We've got ships. We've got containers. We don't railroads. We don't need it. It's not a means of transit, in my view, and so. That argues against the fact that these are ours. I think we're just simply being visited by multiple races, and this particular group has triangles, and they fly them wherever they want to. They know there's an agreement been made that the government will not shoot at them, and I think that's made quite clear that if they are put under fire, that the repercussions would not be pretty. So I think we leave them alone. They're officially judged as not a threat, those who dare talk about them, and they fly wherever they want. So.
And I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's the treaty for Antarctica where there's no military allowed to go into that area, at least not shoot any weapons or that kind of thing. But there's a treaty that most of the countries of the world have set aside that frozen area to be alone, so to speak, and environmentally strong, etc. But the point being is that if we do have visitors, that would be an ideal place to hide, for lack of a better word. And I don't know if you remember, but going back before World War II, the Nazis and Germans visited that area for a long time.
Right.
And suddenly allegedly developed flying saucers, so to speak.
Well, they took them with them. They had flying, we could call them anti-grav or whatever you want, craft in Germany, and there were witnesses that were working on them, and they were told to stay in their barracks at night, and if they so much as opened a window, they'd be shot. Not to look. There was a lot of noise. Hard to know. Hard to know. Yeah, it was the primary one that we know about is called, in German, Die Glocke. And if you look up the bell or Die Glocke, you'll see what it looked like. It looked like an acorn. It looked like what crashed in Virginia. The famous one in Pennsylvania. What is it? You know what I mean.
Offhand, I don't know.
Yeah, you do. It came in over Canada down low and swooped across a bunch of different states. And Kecksburg, that's what
Kecksburg.
It is.
Landed in Kecksburg.
Kecksburg, and it went into a little ravine, and it was about the size of Die Glocke. And Clark McClellan tells the story that he was flown up there with one of the experts on German technology, and he got to see it, and it was taken out on a lowboy, and he said it was, the Germans said it was Die Glocke. So, don't know. Kecksburg, very famous, Kecksburg, in case you folks haven't seen it or heard about it. It's well worth a read. It's a real deal. Real landing, crash landing, as it were. Craft wasn't damaged. The Army came in very quickly, sealed off the area, put it on a lowboy, and got it out of there, covered it up.
To Wright-Patterson.
Yeah, you and I are going to end up at Wright-Patterson one day in the museum.
Now, there's some talk that might have been a Russian satellite.
Too big. And the way it came in was odd. It changed course, maintained altitude, slowly came down, and then landed, as it were. Satellites don't do that. At least not any that I know about. Satellites come down on a trajectory and they crash. Boom. This thing meandered its way from Canada all the way to Kecksburg. Picked up on radar and watched. And anyway, that was quite a story. Okay, let's go to the center column at Rents, your website for news and information. Real news, real information, the best I can put together for you, and look at George's three issues. Which one do you want to look at first, George? Or do you have something you want to talk about? You always do these wonderful features at the beginning of each week's Filer's File, and they are very good, very good.
Well, we mentioned Goldwater the other day, but I think he's prominent in his research for information, and he apparently was a good friend with General LeMay. And asked General LeMay if he could see Hangar 18 and know about UFOs and all that stuff. In any case, Senator Goldwater was an eight-time senator, but besides that, he was also a major general in the reserve, so that he had high clearances and so on. And he was a friend of the head of the Air Force, General LeMay. And General LeMay gave him tells about the activities that he threatened to end their relationship for life if he tried to look into that any closer, and that he should stay away from Colonel William Blanchard. Blanchard was the head commander of the 509th at the Roswell, and obviously knew firsthand what it was about. Interestingly enough, I spent some time in General May's office during the Cuban situation. I don't know if I ever told you that story, but...
No, please do.
I had flown tankers in England and had obtained a top-secret clearance, and I was transferred to Langley Air Force Base, which was at that time called Tactical Air Command. It's now the Air Combat Command, but in any case, they were looking around for someone with clearances. I had actually flown some missions down off of Cuba where the reconnaissance aircraft flew over Cuba and picked up the pictures of what the Soviets were building down in Cuba. In any case, because they had this clearance, they called me back to Langley, and I thought I was in some kind of trouble. and they wanted me to be a courier. And my job was to take the film that the reconnaissance aircraft were taking after it was developed from General Sweeney's office to General LeMay's office in Washington, D.C. And he had the most beautiful secretaries I've ever seen.
Well, perks.
In any case, he didn't talk much to me other than the fact that you carry this bag with handcuffs, and they'd undo the handcuffs and then open up the leather pouch and show them the
very... You carry the cuff bag.
Photographs, right.
That's kind of
and
fun.
And he would look at them, and he'd look at me and, you know, like, they're building missile bases and there's ham sites and so on. And he says, I want you to tell General Sweeney, who's the commander of Tactical Air Command, that if they knock down one of our aircraft, we're going in and knock out that base. You know, if it's done by fighters or if it's a SAM site, we're going to knock that out. Tell them to get ready to hit them if we, this happens. Well, sure enough, a couple of days later, we lost the U-2.
Yeah.
And I assumed that we were going to go in and attack it. But apparently, President Kennedy told LeMay not to attack, and we did not attack, which was, in retrospect, probably a smart thing to do. But he was very, warlike in his comments.
Yeah, well, that was, the problem presented as a nail, and he had a hammer, and that's how
right.
He was thinking. This, did you hear him say that?
He told me to tell General Sweeney about attacking their bases.
Ah, okay.
In other words, he didn't want to do it over the phone or anything.
I got it. It was by mouth. Yeah, I got you.
And then, of course, I went and told General Sweeney when I went back to Langley, which is in Virginia, about 100 miles away or so. And sometimes I would drive and sometimes I would fly if I'd have a plane for me. And I was going back and forth carrying messages. That was like the most important one that I thought people would be interested in.
Well, that's pretty important. What did LeMay say about the UFO ET thing to you?
He didn't discuss that with me. There was very few words that he said to me other than, it's kind of like an order. I would go in and salute and give him the package and He'd look at it, and I would leave, and he would make some comment,
Like, get your eyes off my secretaries?
No, he never said that.
Secretaries
were always very nice.
Ah, I'll bet they were.
And for about a week or so there, during the Cuban crisis, I was going back and forth, kind of like right in the middle of things. And then some of the pictures that I gave him ended up that President Kennedy used to explain to the public what was going on.
Were you able to see the pictures when you unhitched the valise?
Bit. You
didn't stand over his shoulder and look at him. I got it, but you could see them on the desk. And
I was always on the other side of the desk.
But did he have a magnifying glass, or did he have a photo analyst, or did he know, was he that talented that he could?
He seemed to know what it was just almost every time I was there, it was just and I and the secretary. And usually they were, introduce me, bring me in, and they would leave. So most of the time it was just he and I, but he didn't say much to me.
That's very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, a cigar.
Yeah, sure, always. You were, George, you were blessed to be at literally one of the most pivotal points of 20th century history. You were right there. That's fascinating.
Now, one interesting thing is that later on, I talked to a sergeant in the Cuban Army who was there, in one of the bases.
Yeah.
Infected.
Yeah.
And actually, he called me up and said that, he was in Cuba, but they were told in that the UFOs flying over were ours, were American.
Really? Now, this is interesting. So they were seeing UFOs,
right,
and they were told by their government or military that, don't worry, they're Americans. Or worry they're Americans, one or the other. But
right.
That's very interesting.
Now, I had heard about that time that some MiGs, Russian MiGs, but actually probably flown by Cubans, mm-hmm. had taken off and tried to attack a UFO. And
didn't do too well.
Didn't do too well. They, when fired upon, the UFOs will defend themselves.
Knock them right down. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, well, very interesting. We learned that, too. Of course, Frank Fraschino's book, Shoot Them Down. We learned the lesson the hard way. Lost hundreds of air crew. Lots of airplanes in 53 and 54 until the order to shoot them down was rescinded.
You know, during that time period, people don't realize we were losing thousands of aircraft each year.
Thousands?
About 2,000 or 3,000 each year. I have the exact number somewhere.
This is during the shoot them down period?
Right. Now, the aircraft were not very safe, and they obviously had, you know, mechanical problems.
There were some that crashed due to mechanical problems, but not all. Thousands of planes, that's a lot. Wow. Wow, most interesting. Okay, now, with the end of the missile crisis, what did your line of responsibility move to? Were you still briefing?
At that time, I had been flying, and because of the missile crisis, I got to know the various generals and colonels, you know, at Tactical Air Command. And shortly after the Cuban crisis, they closed our squadron down, and they put me in the C-130s, and they wanted to transfer me to Nashville. I said I'd like to stay at Langley because I had the house there and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Went up to see General Rakovich and said, gee, General, I'd like to be in intelligence. And he picked up the phone and he called personnel and he said, Captain Filer is now in intelligence tactical air command headquarters.
Gosh.
So,
wow.
He says, your report here tomorrow morning.
That is an incredible story and a remarkable amount of respect for you. They knew who you were and wow. Good job. Good job indeed. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll come right back. Okay, welcome back. George Filer's Filer's Files, you can get them free. It's a wonderful thing to get every week into your electronic mailbox. Just ask George, just write to him at MajorStar@Verizon.net and tell him you heard him here and you'd like a subscription and you will receive it from the National UFO Center. And issue number 12, I was just looking at the lead story. He always has a feature story at the top. Pilots are afraid to report sightings. Yes, generally, that's true. I don't know that the word fear is the best one, but it works. They are afraid, but they're not shaking in their boots afraid. They're concerned about the consequences, especially commercial pilots. They just don't talk. There's that. Then you got Jimmy Kimmel interviews President Obama. I played that clip a couple times the other night.
Right.
And it's pretty obvious that Obama is acting like he has been briefed and told that the official position is no comment, which is what he's done. He was very smug in the way he spoke about this. I didn't get the idea he was being particularly humorous, but laughing at a very serious subject.
Yeah, I saw that as well. I had a feeling that somebody had certainly told him not to talk about it.
Yep. He said, that's what we're told to do, not to talk about it. So much for the president being the commander-in-chief.
Hmm? Disclosure Project, and well, there's a number of pilots in that, and they said that, you know, you could lose your job talking about UFOs and so on. Although a fellow sitting next to me, Captain Current, talks rather openly about it, and apparently his airline doesn't bother them too much. I'm not even sure what airline he's with, but depends on who your boss is and everything and how public you go, I guess.
Interesting little piece here about Baron von Richthofen in World War One. The Red Baron, a German fighter pilot with the Imperial German Army Air Force. He is considered to be the top ace of World War One, being officially credited with 80 combat victories in the air. He was flying on a mission over Belgium in 1917 when he encountered a saucer-shaped craft about 130 feet in diameter with undulating orange lights. Supposedly, von Richthofen apparently attempted to shoot the craft down. The Baron was shot down April 1918, the next year. There were many reports of various types of balloons and dirigibles and other strange craft that may have led to this account. So it could be a mixed confusion story, but then again, maybe it wasn't.
Well, one thing that was interesting about World War One is that there was hundreds of reports of dirigibles, which is also almost exactly like our cylinder shape.
Well, weren't they, but there were dirigibles in World War One. The Germans,
yeah, there were dirigibles, went, but yeah. Mm-hmm. They had, like, I'm just talking round numbers, you know, like 400 dirigible reports over England on certain dates.
Uh-huh.
And then after the war, they compared the dates with, you know, the reports, and
the
dirigibles flew very infrequently because of weather and a lot of other problems. And in any case, they had numerous sightings that they couldn't account for, that there was no dirigibles in the air, and yet people were reporting them. And these were, you know, trained people to look for enemy aircraft and so on. In other words, they weren't just the run-of-the-mill type observer. So there's been actually, you know, reports of UFOs almost throughout history.
I think that's a fair statement, that there have been. Yeah. We've seen medieval artwork depicting them, and, you know, they didn't have TV then, so where are they going to get the idea unless they see them up in the sky?
They even made laws against it.
How so?
Well, I think it was in France, for example, had some reports, you know, UFOs, and they put out a law not to, let's say, talk to the aliens and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
In other words, well, there are always, apparently all through history, there's been stories of abductions where there may or may not be involved with aliens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the, going way back, the fairies and the little people and so on were accused of taking changelings and taking babies and replacing them with other babies that were not the people's actual babies, but the, you know, hybrids and so on. In any case, they were trying to prevent that kind of thing, or these stories going on. That did occur. That there's more to that history than most people realize. You know, recorded.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, no, that's... go ahead, George. Sorry.
They didn't call them UFOs, obviously, but that's essentially what they appear to be when they describe them in their
capabilities. They called them flying carpets, didn't they?
Yeah, shields.
Shields, carpets, chariots. Okay. Issue number 13. There's that picture of handsome George. Oh, and there's Neil Armstrong. Okay. Timothy Good reports astronaut Armstrong at the M16 member secret space conference in Italy stated, this is a quote, "It was incredible. Of course we had always known there was a possibility. The fact is we were warned off the moon. There was never any question then of a space station or a moon city." Armstrong, "How do you mean we were warned off?" he was asked. He said, "I cannot go into details except to say their ships were far superior to ours, both in size and technology. Boy, were they big and menacing. No, there is no question of a space station." This, of course, way back. We've made peace with them and they're leaving us alone. But if you've watched the stories and seen many things flying around the ISS on video. And it's funny because the people will be describing the view and something will fly in front of them and there'll be a dead silence. They won't say anything. Because what are you going to say? Oh, there goes another one. Anyway. All right, we'll be right back with George. Hold on. Okay, back with George. And if you'd like, by all means, go to Rents.com and look at issues number 12, 13, and 14. You'll find them right there in the center column. And we've looked at 12 already. I'm going to go up to number 14 now and see what George has there. Okay, you'll see it in the center at the top. Father's Files, issue number 14. 2015, Senator Goldwater believes in aliens. You know, that...
Right, we talked about
that. Yeah, that expression has always kind of amused me. Yeah, you don't have to believe in the Pacific Ocean. You know, it's there. These things are there. Who are they? That's open to debate. Some are ours, obviously. Some are theirs. I don't think we have very many, if we have any at all. We're continually trying to come up with these ramjet things that can go very fast. Why would we do that, George, if we've got other technology that is much more significant and substantial? And ramjets and, you know, Mach 6, Mach 7. I mean, we've got... We probably have fleets in space... Spaceships, naval ships in space that can go. They're talking now about making a trip to Mars in 36 days, I think, with a, believe it or not, a UFO-shaped craft, around a donut-shaped craft. And if that's the case, and they're soliciting bids for high-velocity deep space engines to move something like that very quickly to Mars, you know, a month would be fine. And if I were them, I'd build three and certainly have backup in case one of them doesn't make it. You have a chance of extracting people from the surface of Mars, or they'll certainly... I wouldn't be at all surprised. Did you see the picture of what looks like a squirrel on the surface of Mars? It looks as if a squirrel was let go there by somebody to see if it could breathe and function. And it was quite healthy, and it was in between a couple of rocks, and it was a squirrel. And it, you know, a squirrel's a squirrel. You can find it. Look for a squirrel on Mars. And I think that we would, you know, have taken something up there maybe and released it to see, check on the air, and probably had a little digital monitor on the animal. But anyway, there's so much going on Mars. What a treasury. What a fascinating place to go. And they have, how many was it, 10 or 12,000 people volunteering for a one-way trip? But if they can cut the time down to 36 days... you don't have to do that. You can go for a couple of years and come back. They could have regular ships going back and forth. Trouble that is rather obvious is that we'd probably start to trash Mars like we've trashed this place. You know, putting nuclear reactors up there, and God, just, we don't need that.
One thing I have in the files that you may have noticed is that Art Campbell has been doing studies on the UFO crash at St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're finding lots of remnants and pieces of metal shards.
Oh, they are. Oh, they are finding pieces? See, I haven't been able to go through them. Which issue is this?
13. But I'm mentioning it in several of the...
Yeah. Files. Okay, I see it.
And... in any case, there's, I think, more information is going to be coming out about that. But
well, good.
They even found what looks like a baby shoe, but or a child shoe that they...
Oh my!
They think might, you know, belong to an alien or something.
Uh-huh.
In any case, this happened way back in July of 1947, and they think it's tied in with the Roswell crash. That
I think there were two. Two.
Possibly they crashed together or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, it's a study that we should look into.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to mention was that, I don't know if you've ever seen me on TV, but on this Friday night, I'll be on a show called Hangar One.
Nice. I don't have TV, but good for you.
It's on the History Channel.
Yeah, well, get your part taken out and put on YouTube so I can watch it.
Okay. But on Friday, just about everything on the History Channel has to do with, you know, ancient aliens and UFOs and so on, and the show that I'm on, Hangar One. And that's going to be on each Friday, I think, for the next 12 weeks.
Well, if they haven't gotten to the point where they... have over-prepared us. I don't know when they will. Ever since the 1950s, we've been getting a constant drumbeat of UFO ET. We're more than ready. And I think most people would yawn and go, oh, all right, well, big surprise. I mean, it's silly.
Well, something like 24 countries have released their UFO files. I don't know if we're ever going to get around to it.
No, not this one. We'll be last. Art Campbell has done an incredible job of researching the recovery of a crashed flying saucer in the plains of San Augustine in New Mexico at about the same time as the Roswell crash. He has an exciting story to tell. I highly recommend him and his programs. So said Stanton Friedman, our friend of so many years, nuclear physicist. The book contains some detail of the metal shard testing found at the crash site. We started finding them at the site in 1995. The chapter goes into some detail by Steve Colburn, our lead scientist. John Rao of the Open Minds Organization funded this research. Colburn has determined through a series of sophisticated tests that the six metal shards tested were, one, all with different exotic coatings, and two, all were not made with known Earth technology. The book describes the Arroyo Basin, where the crash occurred. Also discussed is the erosion that eventually brought the strange metals to the surface. Photographs from the site, from both air and ground, as well as mysterious bare area with over 100 feet long, cut through the sagebrush. So there's still probably more metal underneath them.
Yeah, they've used, the metal detectors and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of shifting in the sands, over 50 years and so on. So something could be quite deep, obviously. But they think that the main craft, was hauled away a long time ago.
Right.
And this is kind of like the remnants left there.
Well, all we need are some remnants. I mean, they, if they don't fit with anything that was made then or anything that was made now, what's the answer? The answer is obvious. It wasn't made here. So there you go. Good. Very, very good. Glad to see these things happening. And I would urge anyone out there who was affiliated with Roswell, and there are still a few left, please don't take it with you. We have a birthright to know about what this phenomena really is. Don't take it with you. Share it. Don Schmidt, Ron Carey, others, call George Filer. We need to have this information. We have a right to it, and you're not going to be violating any oath that really matters anymore. This country and its military are a ghost of what it was back then. What do you know about these Roswell slides? I'm told that the whole thing, Jaime Maussan is involved with it, that the whole thing is a medieval mummy, and it's all going to collapse and implode this spring. It's just not going to happen. It's not an ET.
He told me about it, but I hadn't really seen it or evaluated it.
Yeah.
I don't think he's trying to make it.
No, I think it may be just a mistake. I'm not knocking Jaime. I wouldn't do that. He's dedicated far too many years to this subject. But I think that this is, from what I'm told, this is not the real deal. So we'll see. Did you see that black and white short film clip of something on a stretcher outside of the hangar at Roswell?
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
All I know is different people I had talked to said that they're more human-like than most people realize. And so I always kind of keep that in the back of my mind, but what is...
Well, there may be a servant class of grays, and then there may be the actual, the dominant class or the intelligent class would look very much human. I have no doubt that they're walking amongst us. You've seen them.
Been like robotic... I'd say half human and half Roman, robotic or half alien,
yeah.
Kind of a mixture.
Well, why not? Hybrids.
Their technology is apparently much farther ahead of us than we realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was going to be a big to-do about these Roswell slides and so forth, but don't get your hopes up too high as this being the smoking gun. I'm not sure. I'm told by very smart people that this is going to kind of just fall apart here. It is an old object.
I wouldn't be surprised at that. I like to talk to people, like wives of generals and so on, and they give you a lot of insight.
The best way to get information, telegraph, telephone, tell a woman. Remember that. They talk. You're right. Okay, my friend, thank you. It's good to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk to you in the middle of the month or something. We'll get together with Frank and...
Sure.
He's got, I think, Major Ware. He's trying to get
Colonel
on.
Ware? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll look forward to that. Thanks, George, very much.
Okay.
Okay, good night. Okay. back with hour two in just a few.